Good morning. I too want to greet you in Jesus' name this morning and want to welcome you visitors to participate with us. Would also like to say it's good to see you home, Shane. And pray God's blessing on those that are not able to be among us this morning, that God would bless you where you are. I too want to say thank you for the love offering that you all shared with our family. We feel very unworthy of this, and we thank you for the love that we felt through that. Thank you. Also for the basket that we found in our car, we've made a lot of memories with that already, and we thank you for that. As I looked through that basket, each thing that I saw in there promoted family time and promoted togetherness, and we really appreciate that. I've titled the message this morning, Better Together. And I would like to briefly read Philippians 1. You don't need to turn there. A verse stood out to me as Ed read those. I believe it was Philippians 1:26. And it touched on the idea of togetherness. Let's see. That your rejoicing may be more abundant in Jesus Christ for me by my coming unto you again. And I trust that that is our desire this morning, that our coming together, that we could more abundantly rejoice in Jesus Christ, that we could be encouraged by one another's life of faithfulness, by the direction we receive, and so forth, by coming together. Many of you have probably seen the sign on the Fruta Middle School. How many of you have seen that sign, "We do our best together"? Okay, it's been there about 5 years, so we were just talking about it recently, and we wondered why they haven't changed that sign yet. But I think there's a lot said in a few words. As God looks down from heaven, do you think he would rather see us strong enough that we could support ourselves spiritually, and we were strong enough to carry our own weight? Or would he rather see us leaning on each other, growing from each other, and banding together for his cause? Do you think we could possibly, if we scattered out a bit, could we divide and conquer better? Our goal here is to witness for Jesus, the Great Commission. Do you think we could better live out this Great Commission if we would scatter a bit rather than being on a clump here? I believe that God has instilled within each one of us as humans a desire to be together. This is a God-given desire, a sense of community, a sense of fellowship. And I want to turn to Nehemiah this morning. We're going to be looking at the account of the reconstructing of Jerusalem. And forgive me, I have read this recently, but I couldn't find anywhere in my notes where this was. So I hope that this isn't redundant. I want to read the first chapter of Nehemiah and into verse 8 of the second chapter. So just a little backdrop to this story. Nehemiah is a cupbearer for the king. He's serving in the king's palace. And he gets word that the city that he, if I understand correctly, grew up in, the city of his fathers, was torn down and destroyed. And this was very hard for him to hear. And we'll read and explain further after we read this chapter. The words of Nehemiah, the son of Hakaliah, and it came to pass in the month of Chislew in the 20th year, as I was in Shushan the palace, that Hanani, one of my brethren, came, he and certain men of Judah, and I asked them concerning the Jews that had escaped, which were left of captivity, and concerning Jerusalem. And they said unto me, the remnant that was left of the captivity there in the province are in great affliction and reproach. And the wall of Jerusalem also is broken down, and the gates thereof are burned with fire. And it came to pass, when I heard these words, that I sat down and wept, and mourned certain days, and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven, and said, I beseech thee, O Lord God of heaven, the great and terrible God, that keepeth covenant and mercy for them that love him and observe his commandments. Let thine ear now be attentive, and thine eyes open, that thou mayest hear the prayer of thy servant, which I pray before thee now night and day. And for the children of Israel, thy servants, confess the sins. Excuse me, I'm going to back up. For the children of Israel, thy servants, and confess the sins of the children of Israel, which we have sinned against thee. Both I and my father's house have sinned. We have dealt very corruptly against thee, and have kept commandment, and have not kept the commandments, nor the statutes, nor the judgments, which thou commandest thy servant Moses. Remember, I beseech thee, the word that thou commandest thy servant Moses, saying, If ye transgress, I will scatter you abroad among the nations. But if you turn unto me, and keep my commandments, and do them, though there were of you cast out into the uttermost parts of the earth, of heaven, yet will I gather them from thence, and will bring them unto the place that I have chosen to set my name there. Now these are the servants, thy people, whom thou hast redeemed by thy great power and by thy strong hand. O Lord, I beseech thee, let now thine ear be attentive to the prayer of thy servant and to the prayer of thy servants who desire to fear thy name. Prosper, I pray thee, thy servant this day, and grant him mercy in the sight of this man, for I was the king's cupbearer. Okay, now we're coming down to the part where Nehemiah is before the king as cupbearer. And it came to pass in the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of Artaxerxes the king, that wine was before him. And I took up the wine and gave it unto the king. Now I had not been before time sad in his presence. Therefore the king said unto me, Why is thy countenance sad, seeing thou art not sick? This is nothing else but sorrow of heart. Then I was very sore afraid, and said unto the king, Let the king live forever. Why should not my countenance be sad, when the city, the place of my father's sepulchres, lieth waste, and the gates thereof are consumed with fire? Then said the king unto me, For what dost thou make request? So I prayed to the God of heaven, And I said unto the king, If it please the king, if thy servant hath found favor in thy sight, that thou wouldest send me unto Judah, unto the city of my father's sepulchres, then I may build it. And the king said unto me, The queen also setteth by him, For how long shall thy journey be, and when wilt thou return? So it pleased the king to send me, and I sent him a time. Moreover, I said unto the king, If it please the king, let the letters be given unto me to the governors beyond the river, that they may convey me over till I come unto Judah. And a letter unto Asaph the keeper of the king's forest, that he may give me timber to make the beams for the gates of the palace, where appertained to the house, and for the wall of the city, and for the house that I should enter into. And the king granted me according to the good hand of my God upon me. Okay, so we see here in verse 5 and 6, Nehemiah's heartfelt prayer and his desire to see the city of his people rebuilt. He also remembered the promise that God had given them in verse 8 and 9 that if they would transgress, they would be scattered abroad. But if they would keep God's commandments and follow them, although they be scattered abroad, that they would be gathered together in a safe place. Nehemiah remembered this promise. He knew it would take a great effort on everyone's part to rebuild this city, to make this place of safety. He knew it was going to take everyone's involvement. I want to look at some interesting facts about this king here. So, history records that, just a few interesting facts, that his left arm was longer than his right arm. I'm sorry, his right arm was longer than his left. And he got the throne because his older brother killed his father, and he turned around and killed his older brother. So that's why this King Artaxerxes was in the place he was. There's another time that he was challenged. This king was challenged by a military commander to a duel in front of a crowd of people. And he accepted this challenge and killed the man. My point I want to bring out is the fact that this king was not, in as far as strength goes, was not a pushover. He was not, I wouldn't say, according to history, he was a wimpy being. It does seem, in spite of all this toughness, that he had a good heart to some degree, and his kingdom did prosper under his rule. Apparently, he also had a heart for his cupbearer, Nehemiah. And he noticed that the day this is recorded, he was a little down in the mouth. He was discouraged. And he asked Nehemiah, what is wrong? He could sense something was wrong. And we see the king and the queen both feeling sorry for Nehemiah, to the point that they wanted to find a solution for this sorrow. And in verse 5 and 6, I believe it is, they felt so sorry for this fairly important man. You think of a cupbearer, and his job is fairly important. If he is serving wine, he tests the wine and keels over, the king is going to get a new cupbearer. The king is not going to drink the wine that Nehemiah would have drank. And so he holds a very trusted job in the palace. Not just anybody could be the cupbearer. But we see the king and the queen releasing Nehemiah to go do this great work that saddened his heart to see. And it's interesting reading back, turn a book back to Ezra in chapter 4, that this was the same kingdom, if I've read correctly, this was the same kingdom that in previous years had prevented Jerusalem from being built. This was also the same kingdom that had thrown Daniel in the lion's den because they couldn't go back on their word. So we see this being a kingdom of, you could say, integrity. They stood by what they believed, and they would not go back on their word. But here, Artaxus backs up on his previous decision and sends Nehemiah to rebuild the city. And he not only allowed him to go, but he sent him with letters to get him through the hostile land where he would be crossing. And if you think about the potential threat that this was to his very kingdom in having Jerusalem rebuilt, the walls fortified, the gates fixed, it was a work of God that he allowed Nehemiah to go. So Nehemiah started his journey. It was approximately 1,000 miles back to Jerusalem. He crossed these hostile lands because of the letters that the king sent with him. And he even sent him with a convoy of soldiers to protect him. And down in chapter 2 and verse 8, the king even gives him building materials to work with. So apparently this king was not as heartless as it seemed like some other kings were in that day. Moving down to chapter 2 verse 12, Nehemiah, so he arrives there, and he woke up in the night and sneaks out to take a look at the city, at how bad it actually was. You know how you hear a story and you wonder, is it actually that bad, or maybe it's worse? So Nehemiah gets up. He doesn't want anybody to know about this. He sneaks out, and just read here. And I arose in the night, I and some few men with me. Neither told I any man what God had put in my heart to do at Jerusalem. Neither was there any beast with me, save the beast that I rode on. And he rides out there. He calls his animal a beast, so I'm guessing he was riding a donkey. But he gets out there, and the city was such a mess that he couldn't pass through it with his donkey. Just imagine in the middle of the night, in the dark, the city that once was great, he couldn't even pass through. It's just a bunch of rubble. But Nehemiah had a vision, and he's able to look past this rubble that he's wading through. Okay, so moving on now in verse 20. He faces some opposition from Sanballat and Tobiah, the servant of the Ammonite. And these people, they were seemed like they were throwing some negative things. They were close enough to see the work, but far enough away that they were okay criticizing it. So, I just love how Nehemiah gets a little snappy with them, and we read here in verse 20, "Then I answered them and said unto them, the God of heaven, he will prosper us. Therefore we his servants will arise and build. But ye have no portion, nor right, nor memorial in Jerusalem." I just love that kind of grit that Nehemiah had. He had a vision beyond his feelings, beyond the people around him that wanted to discourage the work. Notice one important thing in verse 20. He didn't say, "I will build Jerusalem." He said, "We will build Jerusalem." I'm not going to read, but in chapter 4, the people, again, are criticizing. They're saying how weak the walls are and that a fox could tear down what they're building. And I had to think, are we guilty of doing this in church life? As we watch others do life, are we just far enough away to feel okay criticizing? Or are we willing to step in and involve ourselves and be helpful? It got so bad that two people had to work together, one holding a shield and a weapon, while the other one worked. And it sounds negative, but they're building a wall to protect themselves. Talk about real motivation to get this wall built. And so I think this negative thing could have possibly been a positive thing. Chapter 4, verse 6. "So built we the wall, and the wall was joined together into half thereof, for the people had a mind to work." I just think that is a beautiful picture of that wall coming together in the middle, and that wall being finished, a place of safety again. But it didn't come without the people laying themselves on the line. We won't get into this, but there's a point in here where they did have some squabbles. It was about finances and debt. And they were willing to lay their finances, to put their life in jeopardy to get this protection. And we see even through that, Nehemiah's courageous leadership in leading them through that, those differences. It was very apparent that Nehemiah's vision had worked. His vision, he was able to pass on to others. Some great leaders can be strong people, but it can be difficult to pass on the vision. And by the in chapter 6 and verse 15, it says the wall was completed in 52 days. What an incredible thing. And it's quite obvious that his vision was passed on to them, and they all had a mind to work. They didn't have modern-day equipment. This wasn't a thing of excavators and dozers to clear the rubble. I don't know what equipment they had, but I think it would have been fairly labor-intensive. The people had a mind to work. I wonder, so we have friends in the community, good friends that know us quite well, and they're not on the outside throwing sneers at us, but they are looking in. I wonder, what are they seeing? What do they see in our church? What do they see in our marriages? What do they see? Do the way we talk and the way we do business, does it line up? Do they see all these things we do as a work of God? I believe that there's times where those looking on can more accurately tell us where we are. And that's humiliating sometimes. But if we would ask them about some of these things, about our church, do they see us as a bickering church? Or do they see us as a church that is working together? I'm not trying to paint a perfect picture, but a church that we as men and women are willing to lay down and surrender our personal agenda. We're willing to lay down our time and surrender to God for the betterment of the group. And while we think this may be secluded to our church, and a lot of people probably don't notice, I think they do more than we realize. And I just want to encourage us in that we pull together, that our walk lines up with our talk. I want to tell a small account of pulling together. Probably 10 to 15 years ago, I don't remember details very well. And unfortunately, I cannot call my brother and confirm some of these details. But it was a rainy day, and me and my brother Jake decided that some fields needed some extra tillage, and we got in his pickup truck, and the fields had been plowed and dissed, and so you can imagine there was deep mud, and everything went well with momentum on our side, but pretty soon we got a little, I guess, braver than we should have, and lost our momentum, and we were very buried up. And we did not know what to do. Obviously, we're way out in this disced and tilled field. It rained a lot. No piece of equipment could get to it to pull it out. And I'm not suggesting any of you boys try this, but we pondered this and soon concluded that the only thing that would get us out would be a team of horses. And so we went over to some Amish friends, and sure enough, they liked the idea too. And we got a team of Belgians and went back to this truck, and we hooked up to the truck. And for the first bit, he gave the commands, and they had a younger Belgian working with an older one trying to teach it. And this Belgian, this younger one, he just lunges in and way ahead of the other one. And they seesawed for the first bit. And they didn't go nowhere. The truck didn't move. And pretty soon we started to question his horseman skills. And he stopped the horses and talked to him for a bit, calmed him down. Of course, the young one was all worked up. And when he gave the word, they went into that harness together. And it was a picture that I will never forget. It was a beautiful thing. Those horses dropped down, and they were throwing mud all over the truck, and they walked forward. And, you know, I just had to bring that in here. I asked the question earlier, do you think we would be better by ourselves? I hope that this answered that question. Will we go further by ourselves? No. These enemies that were watching Nehemiah, they were paying pretty close attention. They would have loved to seen a small disagreement shut the work down. Imagine if one man thinks the wall should be a foot higher or a foot over. Imagine the difficulty that could bring to the whole process. The potential for chaos. The bottom line was, Nehemiah had a pure heart after God. He wasn't leading these men into something that they would later regret. His motives were pure. And he was not just out to benefit himself. He wanted to see his people protected. Okay, so how can we make this practical for us today? I realize we are a diverse group here. We come from many different places. Naturally, our preferences may be different. I'm not saying that everything we do should be done together. I'm sure if we show up, all 100 of us, tomorrow morning at Mark's shop and say, we're ready to work, let's build church. That's going to be a little overwhelming. Or if we decide that we're going to be brothers, we're all going to be carpenters today, and we show up on Sturdy Built's job site and we're just ready to go. I'm not saying that. But what I am saying is, when it comes to building church, when it comes to our outreach that we're planning, when it comes to missions, mission offerings, us being called, are we willing? Are we there? When it comes to school building, to our families and our marriages, we need each other to see our weak spots. I can see yours, and unfortunately you can see mine. Or not unfortunately. It is for our betterment if we are willing to help each other. 1 Corinthians 12 verse 12 says, "As the body is one and hath many members, and all the members of one body, being many, are..." Excuse me, I'm going to back up. "As the body is one and hath many members, and all the members of that one body, being many, are one body, so also is Christ." Things like our harvest supper, our hygiene kits that we do, and our outreach should go far beyond these things. But let's just say that you're going to do 1,300 hygiene kits all by yourself this next year. And I did some very short math on this, but it takes approximately 120 man hours to put those kits together that we do, and that's, like I said, a very rough guesstimate. So imagine yourself out there in Lynn's shop for 2 weeks all by yourself doing these hygiene kits. Sure, you could do it, but think about the joy that it is to do these things together and the work that gets done, the fun that we have together, the lives that are touched in a short period of time at our harvest supper. We couldn't do these things by ourselves. There are some witnessing things that obviously on our day-to-day basis we do ourselves, and I think that's only good and right, but there's a lot of things that we are better together. Let's talk about marriage for just a little bit. In Ecclesiastes 4, verse 9, "Two are better than one because they have a good reward for their labor." I just know for our family, when, let's say, it's time to eat dinner, and I don't really put a priority on the family having dinner together, but my wife would love to have dinner together. How do you think that will be for the child when he senses we're divided? Thank goodness we both want to have dinner together, and when it's supper time, the boys come to the table whether they want to or not, because it's dinner time. It's a time for family to be together. I believe when we as couples are together in these practical, seemingly small things, it's just like Nehemiah telling those people off. We're a united force telling the works of darkness that they don't have a place here. They don't have any right in our home. There's no memorial here when we are together. Again, I'm not trying to paint a perfect picture. We know that we are all human, and we are all here in the flesh, and We have our faults and failures to deal with. But in order to have a functional marriage, we need to face those things. We need to face those differences and be willing to work them out. So, do we truly have something to offer to those looking in? To our friends in the community, do we have something to offer? Are we showing that through our marriage? What about our school? I frequently hear folks say that they would love to send their children to our school and get a good Christian education. Why do they say that? Do they see us working together in this work? You know, you probably could send your children to a public school and do it a lot cheaper. But at what a cost? Do you know what I mean? What a cost that would be to our children, to everything, to what's most important to us. So how do we find ourselves this morning? Do we see the benefit of collaboration and working together? Or am I just close enough to the work to be able to see it and criticize those putting effort into it? Do we find ourselves blending together? Are you and I, are we team players? I want to close with two scripture verses here. 1 Corinthians 1 verse 10. Now I beseech you, brethren, by the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that ye all speak the same thing, that there be no divisions among you, but that ye be perfectly joined together in the same mind and in the same judgment. Psalms 133 says, verse 1, behold, how good and how pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity. Let's kneel for prayer.